Olon's Journal Articles. First chapter. Title, The Story of Humans, by Olon Bantulo. Abstract. Humans are operating with a lack of information. They have taken an evolutionary course that is a dead end. The only hope is to return to a primitive way of life or altruistically protect those primitive tribes that still exist. The Earth and the Sun. The ancient Egyptians had the god Amon-Ra, who was the sun god. Amon-Ra was received as the national god, represented in human form, sometimes with a ram's head or as a ram. His temple at Karnak, Egypt, was among the largest and wealthiest in the land from the New Kingdom, 1539 c. 1075 BCE onward. Local forms of Amon were also worshipped at the temple of Luxor on the east bank of Thebes and at Madinat Habu on the west bank. When the sun rose in the east, it signified birth, and when it set in the west, it signified death. So the importance of the sun was very prominent in ancient Egyptian mythology. They realized that the sun was the source of all life, as we must do today. For if it wasn't for the sun, there would be no vegetation, which is a source of oxygen for the living and food for animals. The rays of the sun are what bring molecules and atoms together and break them asunder in the processes of life and death. The sun hurdles 2,521,009,475,400,000 calories of energy at the Earth. In less gargantuan terms, this translates to 4,105 calories per minute per square yard. This small amount of energy has to help plants grow to maturation and provide food for the animals who would feed on them, and in turn, the herbivores are consumed by carnivores. Out of the 4,105 calories per minute per square yard, only 185 calories can be used to produce plant material per minute per square yard. Out of these 185 calories, only 5 calories are used to produce animal flesh and bones by the herbivores. In turn, carnivores convert these 5 calories worth of herbivore flesh and bones into 1 calorie worth of carnivore flesh and bones. So you see, the harvesting of energy in each step of the cascade of this energy from plant to herbivore to carnivore has to be very efficient, since the quantity that can be converted is so small. So efficiency is very important. Evolution and the fitness of an individual. Energy efficiency is key to understanding evolution. Without high energy efficiency, individuals cannot compete or cooperate in their daily lives in search of tools, shelter, and food. Energy efficiency determines the shape and size of each individual, whether they have wings, arms, legs, or trunks, to name just a few features of an organism's morphology. You might ask how energy efficiency works itself into an individual having a long arm or a short one. Well, the answer is what it is they are reaching for, or what it is that the arm is used for. Inevitably, we come around to the concept of the environment. The environment of an individual is that part of Earth that provides tools, shelter, and food. Through evolution, the morphology of an individual evolves in such a way that it is more efficient in acquiring tools, shelter, and food. So the environment shapes the individual. One might ask, what does the environment consist of? It consists of inanimate objects, such as stones, rocks, mountains, and valleys. It also consists of the other live individuals that live in the same proximity that might compete or cooperate with that individual which we are talking about. A simpler way to describe this relationship between the environment and the individual is by taking the example of a wedding ring, the environment, and the finger, the individual, it is meant to be on. If the ring is too small, a lot of energy will be spent trying to push it onto the finger, and you can guess that this is less efficient than if it is of the right size and goes smoothly on the finger. The same can be said of a ring that is too large for the finger, where the wearer will have spent a lot of energy trying to keep the ring on the finger, which is also less efficient. If we take the ring to be the environment and at the same time unchanging in size, we have the individual who is trying to wear the ring also trying to lose weight if the ring doesn't fit, or to gain weight if the ring drops off the finger. The process of having a larger or smaller finger is similar to the process of evolution in evolving large animals and small ones. except that the process of evolution does not take into account eating more or less to gain weight or to lose weight, but through changes in the genetic code brought about by appropriate mutations. Genetics is a large and diverse subject, and we will not dive into it here. Suffice it to say that the genetics of an individual define their morphology. So, whether an individual has a tail or not is defined by their genetics. For an individual with no tail to develop a tail, there must be mutations, birth, and a test for a tail to appear. The test consists of whether the tail will improve the efficiency of the individual in acquiring tools, shelter, and food. Another key feature of evolution is that the individual can't consume all the resources that go into tools, shelter, and food. That is key because all living individuals give birth at one time or another. And if the progeny die because there are no materials left for tools, shelter, and food, that would be the end of the species, which is in and of itself evolution at work. And this is called an evolutionary dead end. Individuals who overconsume perish, while individuals who leave the environment in the condition that allows it to regenerate that which was taken survive and thrive. This key feature is called the conservation of the environment. Humans. Humans evolved in a form or have a morphology that does exactly that. For example, so-called primitive tribes leave the environment the same way they found it, and if not, in a condition that the environment can regenerate itself after they leave it and before they return. That way they guarantee that their children and children's children will have the same environment they had in bringing them up. And they do that in the most efficient way possible, so that very little, if any, of the 5 calories per minute per square yard they ingest as food or use to make tools is wasted. Modern humans' environments change over time. Evolutionary dead ends occur when the genetic code is unable to cope with the changing environment. The evolution of a tail is very complex genetically and may take a long time to be generated. If a species requires the evolution of a tail to cope with the environment, and the environment changes faster than the species can evolve a tail, that species will probably die out and be called an evolutionary dead end. And if we look at modern humans, we can find an evolutionary dead end. Modern humans have an insatiable need for resources. This need for resources is occurring faster than the environment can regenerate it. Simply said, the 5 calories per minute per square yard that the sun provides is not enough to meet the needs of modern humans. Ever since the discovery of fire, modern humans have been feeding it whatever resources they can find, including fossil fuels, to fire up their engines to acquire and consume resources for tools, shelter, and food beyond the ability of the environment to replace them. As a result of the use of auxiliary fuels like fossil fuels, the equation of efficiency has been skewed in the direction of inefficiency of modern humans. For example, the so-called primitive tribes consume 5 calories per minute per square yard, while modern humans consume 120,000 calories per minute per square yard, putting modern humans at 24,000 times less efficient than so-called primitive humans. The availability of alternate fuel sources that seem endless at this time contributed to the explosion in the population of humans on the planet Earth. If we ask why evolution has not acted upon modern humans and caused them to be at an evolutionary dead end by now, it is because evolution, or the acquisition of changes to the genetic code, is slower than the acquisition of non-renewable resources by modern humans. But don't worry, nature has a way of coming through in the end. Modern humanity is destined to be an evolutionary dead end. It just will not occur before it destroys the whole planet Earth. The imperative acts we must stop the use of substitute energy sources in the next 30 years and reduce our global population size drastically. It is also imperative that we save the so-called primitive tribes and their environments, for they will be the ones who will take us out of the evolutionary dead end course we have chosen to take. Title: Don't Mess with Mother Nature, by Olon Bantulo. Abstract: Fighting nature is futile. Those who fight it will not survive. The writing is on the wall. Humans will lose and become extinct. Introduction: Nature, adaptation, and the fit. Nature's way is the only way. It is the perfect balance of the living, the inanimate, and the rays of the sun. How this perfection comes about is through a very long time frame riddled with errors and successes. These errors and successes have to do with the survival of individuals with a lifestyle attuned to the environment where the sun's energy is most efficiently used. The living by way of the most efficient lifestyle concerning the use of the sun's energy is called the fittest. Nature's short-sightedness. It is a fact that the world changes over time, and so those who are the fittest today will find themselves less fit tomorrow. To deal with this conundrum, the living contains genetic material that spells out how efficient the living becomes, and when the living turns out to be less. So the genetic materials change to make the living most efficient once again. The genetic materials change to find the best fitness for a given environment. For the most part, change in the living is done in minute steps. It is as if the genetic materials are blind and they feel their way through the environment, taking the smallest of steps. It is an arduous process full of missteps, but occasionally a step lands the living in a most efficient lifestyle. Nature's long-sightedness. Genetic materials exist in very long strings of nucleotides. To effect change, a single nucleotide is altered or a long string of them is activated or deactivated. The average genetic content of species contains a large amount of deactivated nucleotide strings. These deactivated strings can be quite useful in that they can be reactivated in whole or in part to help the species become more energy efficient. So, when a long string of nucleotides is reactivated, they represent a quantum leap in change to the species in achieving energy efficiency. Therefore, these long chains are a way to prepare for possible needs presented by future environmental change. For example, an antlerless deer species found in the fossil evidence suddenly appears with full-blown antlers. The assumption is that this deer species had a string of deactivated genetic material for antlers that was reactivated. Spreading the good nucleotides. When a string of nucleotides is of benefit, it is quickly spread throughout the species by different mechanisms. One such mechanism is sexual reproduction, where the beneficial string of nucleotides is injected into participating individuals. Timeline of change. In humans, it takes a very long time for changes to the nucleotides to occur. For example, 70 nucleotide changes occur per generation. Of course, not all changes are beneficial. To get a grasp of the length of time for beneficial changes to take hold in a population, for example, it took 120 million beneficial nucleotide changes over 9 million years to distinguish between a chimp and a human. The humans. The evolution of humans followed the same processes explained above, where nucleotides are changed or a string of them is activated or deactivated, the results being spread throughout the species to affect better sun energy utilization. Since humans are omnivores, it is thought they started to be hunter-gatherers, which means they hunted for prey and gathered plant materials to be utilized in the most sun energy efficient way. This lifestyle lasted for a million years, which is a testament to its truth. Like a white-tailed deer, hunter-gatherer humans do not affect or harm the forest in any way. What they take or leave behind is quickly regenerated or used to regenerate by others in the environment that which was taken. This concept is characterized as having zero footprints. Part of the 120 million nucleotide changes to the chimp's genetics that turned it into humans was dedicated to increasing human adaptability to differing environments. This was achieved by changes to the central nervous system to accommodate a few new features, such as abstract thought, for example. Modern humans. The increased capabilities of the central nervous system, the brain, had side effects that rendered humans with a large environmental footprint. This meant that what humans took away from the environment was not replaced quickly enough. In the same vein, that which they left behind was not assimilated fast enough. Therefore, gaps in the natural environment were created and waste was accumulated. The transition from a zero to a large footprint had another side effect, which was the accumulation of human possessions. This resulted in the introduction of the concept of power, its accumulation, and the rise of the political system. So, from a balanced environment where all species participated in the transfer of the sun energy through the biota, the human species decided to divert available energy to its expanding desire for power and the accumulation of wealth, be it alive or inanimate. The quest for power over nature led to the discovery of alternate sources of energy, fossil fuels and nuclear, that freed humans of the sun energy efficiency equation, resulting in the explosion in human dominance over the Earth and subsequently increasing the human ecological footprint exponentially. The result is vast gouges in the land and biota and mountains of waste, much of it toxic to life. Unlike the wisdom of nature's genetics, where missteps, steps are eliminated, the human genus had a flaw that was not eradicated. This flaw caused them to be blind to the finite nature of Earth and its fragility. Only a few humans were able to see Earth's future and sound the alarm at a very late stage. Nature and human survival. The wisdom of nature. There are two basic elements to life on Earth. The first is the environment, and the second is the individual living in it. These two elements dance to the song of life. They are also dynamic, so the song of life changes over time. As the environment changes, so does the living individual. The environment also consists of two other components. Component A consists of inanimate objects like rocks, while component B consists of other live individuals. The inanimate and live components also dance to the rhythm of the music of Earth. Both are dynamic, so the music they make also changes over time. As the inanimate objects change, so does the living component of the environment. You may ask how the change in the environment comes about. The answer is they are changed by forces inside and outside the Earth. The environment changes from volcanic activities, where continents are formed and disappear. The environment also changes from the rays coming from the sun that in turn heat up and then cool down the inanimate objects, causing them to change phases. You may ask how the changes to the living come about. The answer is by forces from outside and inside the Earth. From outside the Earth, there is radiation that mutates or changes the genetics of the living individual. From the inside of the Earth, the changes come from chemicals and other factors in the environment that mutate the genetic code. You may ask if all changes to the living are good. The answer is no. The genetics of the living are very strict and particular, so any change can cause the song or music made by that individual to be sour. You may also ask what determines if a change to the genetics of an individual is good or bad. The answer is the ability of the individual in question to survive. You kill a sour note and promote a rhythmical one, don't you? Modern humans. Before the advent of humans, most life forms depended on the rays of the sun as a source of energy for billions of years. It was the right amount of energy to create and maintain the rhythm of life's musical symphony. Even the earliest humans did so. But then human ingenuity discovered an alternative source of seemingly endless energy, which was used to create a sound that did not fit with the original symphony. Villages, towns, cities, and states that now cover the Earth were built with this energy. Rivers were redirected, the ground was disfigured, and oceans were depleted to make room for the growing human population that eventually marred the Earth to the point where humans couldn't hear the original symphony anymore. This new modern sound is a cacophony drowning out the original opus, which now can only be heard by a few researchers looking for the kernel of truth to life's nature. Meanwhile, the rest of humanity is reveling in its noise, proclaiming it is the hum of the universe. So, the curved line was replaced with the straight one, greenery was replaced by gray, chlorophyll was replaced by dioxins, and death was cheated out of its duties. Instead of eliminating the sour notes, modern humanity has bandaged them and made them part of the wine of its cosmos. This modern-day world has very little resemblance to the real one, and as a result is fragile because it carries a heavy load of bitter tones that don't jive with the actual. Death is revered in the genuine world while scorned in that of modern humans. It is the quality control that makes sure no acrid notes are played during life's performance. It is the teacher who makes sure life's symphony is flawless. It is the conductor who guides every life to perform to the satisfaction of the primary universe. Hunter-gatherer lifestyle advantages. nature seems to have dictated the optimum population size for humans. It is around 0.5 to 1.5 individuals per square mile, depending on the capacity of the environment to maintain itself. Nature has several ways of maintaining this density. One is when the population grows too large. The limit of food resources causes starvation and will reduce the population size to optimum. Another tool to maintain a healthy population size is communicable diseases. When the population count increases beyond a certain point, these diseases thrive, causing a decrease in the number of individuals in a population. The current human population density on the Earth is 129 individuals per square mile. As a result, 80 communicable diseases have been identified by the CDC. On the other hand, it is rare to find these 80 diseases in populations of hunter-gatherers with an average human population density of 1.3 individuals per square mile. Unfortunately, modern humans prefer to do battle with nature instead of heeding its wisdom. Another tool at the disposal of nature is the predator-prey relationship. As the predator population increases, the prey population decreases, and in turn, decreasing the predator population when they can't find enough to eat. Modern humans are hoarders, and when anything threatens their hoarded wealth, they do battle to maintain it. So when a herd of cattle is culled by a puma, the puma pays the price, which goes against the wisdom of nature. Shelter is also a tool of nature to control the balance of populations in an environment like a forest. As the raw materials for building a shelter decrease, less shelter is provided, and an increase in the exposure to the elements causes a decrease in the population using the raw materials. Even life expectancy is under the control of nature. Stability is nature's game. When a tribe of hunter-gatherers consisting of 20 individuals lives in a jungle, the tribe needs to stay at 20 individuals to strike a balance with the environment. So, if three babies are born, then eventually three adult tribe members need to die of old age to maintain the 20. If this does not happen and the tribe grows in number, this will cause the jungle to be overburdened and eventually be consumed. Conclusion: nature loves harmony, balance, and symphony. Anything that comes between nature and its beloved activities is eventually eliminated. For modern humans to do battle with nature is futile. The result will be their elimination if they don't heed and quit singing out of tune. Anything that comes between nature. Next chapter, title, Acceptance by Olon Bantulo. In my mind, I fought so hard to save the human race. People said I was so optimistic in my conversations and writings about the subject, and indeed, I was optimistic. I grabbed at anything I could find to make my desires for the human race come true. I hypothesized that if we just save the primitive tribes that exist today, the human race could go on. I even thought that the current civilized populations could be saved by voluntary reduction in population count, refraining from using fossil fuels, and adapting primitive ways of life. All the while I was writing and talking about myself and my fear of dying. I guess I do not have the traditional faith in any conventional religions, and so I have nowhere to go when I die. 6 feet under, I used to tell myself, that's where you will be when you die, where you decay into nothingness. At first look, nothingness is an empty concept. It's like there's nothing there. But that is not true. I am eventually consumed by others, and therefore I live in them, however insignificant they seem to be, like insects and worms. But then, they die into nothingness, but not really, for they contain molecules and atoms that belong to the universe. And suddenly I'm part of something much bigger, much more important. And so it's not nothingness that I'm destined to be. I'll be part of a large magical thing that no one can put in their head, although they can smell it, feel it, play with it, and make things out of it. We can make real things out of it, like tools and shelters. But most importantly of all, and for humans for sure, we can create ideas of where we come from and where we are going. So you might say that I still have an optimistic mind that wishes that I do not perish into nothingness. And in the same vein, if I do not perish into oblivion, then the human race will also perish into somethingness, and there is no loss in that. And so traditional religions are just metaphors for my thoughts about death, dying, and living. Anthropology, in its search for the truth of man, creates its metaphors. The same goes for biology, chemistry, and physics. We are all searching for meaning in the here and now and for a continuum. And so the idea of death to me is one of transformation from a small and insignificant me to an existence free of the confines of my body, an existence that plays an important part in the magic of the cosmos. I therefore must accept the same fate for the human race, for birth and death are as normal as eating a peanut butter sandwich for lunch, if you like that kind of thing.